text 087 69 44 500. Near FM.
Hello and welcome to Collage to Doolig Radio Week. Coming up from 9:30 till 10:30, we have some of the first year students of the media course who curated their own radio station for 1 week. They prepared a 2-hour broadcast each day, which ran the gamut from music to ghosts and sexual health. What follows is a compilation of some of the best bits.
Collage to Doolig Radio Week, here on Near FM.
Good afternoon, I'm DJ TJ.
And I'm Stephen.
And we're here for the next half an hour as your hosts. We will be presenting this show, and this show is called
Avengers Disassemble.
Yeah, see what we did there?
Right, so basically, for the beginning of this show, we're going to talk about a year in Marvel films. We're going to be talking mostly about the MCU. So to start it off, I'll explain what the MCU is. The MCU is the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It consists of about 21, maybe 22 movies at this stage. It goes from 2008's Iron Man up until the Avengers Endgame that's coming out next month, that we're all super excited for. But first of all, we're going to recap the year, because it's been a fantastic year for Marvel, hasn't it?
I know, so first of all, we have Black Panther. Oh my god, Tyler. It was nominated for so many Academy Awards. Won production and costume, which was amazing. It's completely taken over people culture. It was nominated for 3 Golden Globes and 7 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, and won 3 of them. Our show opened with the Academy Award winning nominated song, All the Stars from the Black Panther.
Yeah, this year's also been a great year for women in the Marvel Universe. First of all, Ant-Man and the Wasp. The Wasp is the first female hero to be on billing with any of the heroes, because consistently it's been Avengers and Iron Man and Captain America, but this time the Wasp finally got her own little section on the billboards, as well as, of course, Captain Marvel, which was the first female-led Marvel movie. It only took 11 years in the franchise, but we managed to get there eventually. But they've also announced that there is a Black Widow movie in progress, which is going to be absolutely amazing, because like, she's such a good character. So I'm hoping that it will really do well for her.
Though not in the MCU, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse won Best Animated Feature at the Academy Awards, which made me very happy, as it is a great movie, especially if you love Miles Morales.
And now to the big baddie, Avengers Infinity War, which shocked audiences with its ending. I mean, it was horrible. But it did become the 4th biggest grossing movie of all time, which is amazing that the superhero movie can now be the 4th highest.
No, yeah.
Yeah, so which leads us on to this part of the show, which is called...
How will it end, game?
Full of puns today.
Yeah.
So basically, we're going to talk through some of the theories that we think might happen for Endgame. It's going to be a bit, you know, it's opinion-based. We just got some. We got some from our friends, especially Gavin gave us in a good few. So we're going to start off by saying Pepper Potts will be rescued. Will rescue Tony as Rescue.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit of a confusing title, but it will make sense in a minute. So Tony and Pepper, as we know, are in love.
Yeah.
Getting married, all that stuff. Tony, according to the trailer, is currently stuck in space with Nebula, who is not the nicest person to be stuck in space with.
Yeah, you get the idea.
but Pepper's superhero name is Rescue.
Mm-hmm.
So it would almost make sense for Rescue to rescue her love. Especially since there's been leaked photos of her in that Iron Man-esque suit. So hopefully we'll get to see Rescue. If not, I'm going to be really sad.
Pretty much every sci-fi nerd will be like...
Yeah, no, literally everyone's going to be like, oh my god, Rescue. Because it makes so much sense, especially because her character's developed so much. Next one is Captain America will die. Now, a lot of people seem to believe this. mainly because he's like 90 at this stage.
I mean, it was his birth. His date of birth was disclosed in the last film as being early in the 20th century.
Like. Yeah, like he's super old at this stage. He doesn't look it. He looks damn fine for his age.
It's amazing.
But Chris Evans's contract is up with Marvel soon, so it makes sense that his character will wrap up with me. He's been on screen for 11 years nearly.
Yeah.
And he won't sit back and watch his friends suffer because, I mean, he's the bully beater. He fought the Nazis. He's like their pin boy for like poster boy for like happiness and protection.
He just can't like resist the urge and just like sit back in the shadows and do nothing.
Yeah, especially because of what happened to his best friend. Like, he's not going to sit by and watch Bucky die like that. He's going to give his life for him. I get that.
Like, that's just a waste of your time. Like,
yeah. There's also the Time Stone, which a lot of people seem to have been talking about. This Time Stone theory is a little bit weird. Doctor Strange gave Thanos a different Time Stone from like another part in time, which, I mean, if he has the ability to do that, that it would be amazing and great trickery, because when you mess with Time Stones, it creates loops and does everything like that, so that could work.
Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah, the next one's one of my favourites, though. We titled it Death to Thanos. Lady Death is one of Thanos's, supposed to be his like bae in the Marvel universe, but there's a theory that she won't be happy with so many things dying in the universe, because kind of that's her job.
Yeah.
So the thing that she might destroy him, but though Lady Death isn't in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Hela, the goddess of death, was introduced in Ragnarok.
Yeah.
So it kind of makes sense. Currently, she's just kind of floating around. So it makes sense that she might pop in for a little visit.
Hopefully, yeah.
The next one's a bit weird. Loki might have been Bruce Banner the whole time. You know the way Loki's pretty, like, mischievous and
like your typical age, like
yeah, no, he's constantly like playing tricks on everyone. He's played dead like twice already.
Oh yeah.
So it would make kind of a little bit of sense for him to have faked it, but I mean, to go to that lengths, the Russo brothers did confirm he did die, which kind of puts a bit of spanner in the works for this theory, which makes it a bit redundant, but. Mm-hmm. Me, I gotta hope. He's one of my favourites. I gotta hope that, like, my honey will return.
Only time will tell.
Yeah. Marvel will... next one's... Marvel will contradict itself. Now, this one's gonna be a bit weird. Because Captain Marvel is one of the strongest kind of most not an Avenger yet, but she was introduced and she was blowing up spaceships, running through them and like being like a badass and all, but like when you think about it, I mean, Scarlet Witch can alter reality.
Yeah.
Thor can summon lightning and the Hulk's pretty big, so them saying that she's the strongest, I think they might end up giving that strongest title to someone else. That we don't know how this movie's going to play out and what it's going to do.
Yeah.
Now, we went around Kalashadulik to find out what do they all think about the Avengers movie coming out. We asked them, are they excited and what do they think will happen? And we got some very unique answers. So,
interesting to say the least.
Yeah, some of them are very strange, but I like them, so I think we should listen to some of them.
Yep. Are you excited for Avengers Endgame?
Oh, I'm buzzing for, can't we?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to, you know, the other couple of movies were great. And
absolutely, I mean, it's like the end of an era, really, with this movie coming up now, so. Like, the lead up to from the very first Iron Man all the way to this now is coming to here. So definitely, there's all this talk now of what's going to happen next. Is Thanos going to finally be defeated? Who's going to survive this time? There's rumors who's going to be the ones to survive. Like, so it's definitely exciting for sure.
Yeah, I can't wait because in the last movie, when they all died, I need to know, like, what happens. Like, is Captain Marvel going to save them all? Or is Thanos going to destroy the whole world?
I'm very excited for Avengers Endgame. I've been watching Captain Marvel yesterday.
Can't wait. Infinity War was like one of my favourite movies last year, so...
I am excited for Avengers Endgame. I just hope it's going to be a tie-up that the fans want.
Definitely. I mean, I've been following Marvel pretty much for the... well, the last 10 years in terms of what it is, and it's kind of nice to think of it as an end game, a final point to reach.
I'm really excited. I think it's going to be big. It's going to be big. It's going to be great.
What do you think's going to happen?
Honestly, no.
Yeah, I think some superheroes are going to fight some bad guys, to be honest.
I think it's going to be a bit of time travel involved, and people are going to come back from the dead.
It's hard to know. I think Thanos will definitely have to see his end. I think to somehow it'll be taken, but I don't know. Unfortunately, I think either Tony or Captain America will have to go.
I'd imagine they're all going to come back. I mean, there's a certain point where Doctor Strange, I think in the first one, was sort of making some... He had gone forward in time to see that there was only one way something could happen. And because one of his Infinity Stones, he owned one in the amulet, essentially, I think that Infinity Stone, that's going as part of the actual gauntlet, I think that he didn't curse it, but he put a spell on it.
I think the snap is going to be reversed, but in doing so, many of the characters that are still alive are going to be sacrifice themselves in a way. In order for the snap to be undone, though, they're going to need to get a hold of the Infinity Gauntlet somehow. That's an issue, isn't it?
I think that Ant-Man's going to show up and he's going to be like, I know a way to get back in time, because he can like go real small into that other world. So I think he's going to come back and be like, yeah, I know a way to get back in time. They're going to fly back in time, do something there, figure out a way to bring them back from the dead. And then like Captain Marvel maybe has to like create an Infinity Gauntlet of her own or something. I don't know.
I think Spider-Man's going to come back and he's going to be like a little underdog. And he's going to save them all, and Captain Marvel will help him. So the two of them, they're going to defeat Thanos.
Kalash Sedulik Radio Week, here on Near FM.
So we're joined now in studio with Nikki. How are you, Nikki?
I'm okay, Nicole. Thank you very much for having me in.
Yeah.
At the last minute.
Yeah, very last minute. So from my understanding, you don't drink.
Yeah, sorry. I love that you've invited me on as a guest. As like some kind of unicorn, this
yeah, the
mythical creature that exists in Ireland.
I've never seen one before.
Imagine that, a non-drinker.
What did you do, Paddy's Day?
It's like you're poking at me. Like, are you a ghost? Do you exist? Are you a real thing? What did I do on Paddy's Day? I did everything to avoid anything drink-related.
So no town, no.
No. No. No, I went for a walk in Phoenix Park with my family, as opposed to doing anything other than that. You know what I mean?
So that's better though, so I don't want to be going out getting drunk for the end of the day.
You can say it's better, but I don't know whether you'd like you'd enjoy it.
I was working.
Yeah. So. Actually, it's been such a long time since I've drunk that, but I see people drunk almost all the time. Do you want to know why I don't drink?
Yeah. I was kind of like, why don't you drink?
Well, it's one day at a time. And yeah. No, I was, I did this course here in Kalash, the media course that you're doing right now, before I came back and ended up being a teacher. And I, at the time, we had to go over to the UK to study. We had to do our final year degree over in Wolverhampton. And I went over there and I was broke. I had hardly any money. I had basically £11, which is like 100 of our euro. It's not actually. £11 to survive on. And so the decision was, do I drink or do I eat? So I decided I would eat.
Choose drink.
What would you have chosen, Stephen?
I mean, yesterday I chose drink, but normally it's food. Normally it's food.
Yeah,
usually like in Aldi you can get like the real cheap drink.
Yeah, they're even better. In Wolverhampton they have this thing called Netto, which is the Swedish Aldi, which is even cheaper. Yeah, so basically
I'm just hearing excuses right now.
Well, for not being able to find a way to drink.
Yeah.
The main reason I had no problem giving it up is I never ever found a drink that I liked.
Oh, okay.
I have yet to find a drink that I like, and I'm unlikely to continue trying to find it.
Yeah, I can relate to that, because when I was younger I used to be like, why do people drink beer? Like, it tastes disgusting. And then like it tastes the Wicked, and then you have a tolerance for everything. But
so your what was your transition to drink? Blue Wicked?
Yeah. So I think everyone started out with Blue Wicked. Well, no. When I started drinking, my friends, they were tired of like the vodka and stuff, so then I could never take a shot for vodka for my life or anything. So I started off with the Wicked, and then I eventually like started mixing it, but they'd be like four parts Coke, like half part vodka, like that's how I started. But then
Like, even now, I'm not, like, a big vodka drinker. It's mainly just pints.
I think the advent of Alco Pops, like, in mid-90s, like, the Mad Dog 2020 was the thing that was really big when I was, like, 14 or 15. And if you didn't like beer, it was like, oh, get some MD2020. People would drink that. But it was disgusting. It was, like, this, like, treacly green or orange-flavoured alcohol that was fairly high in volume.
Yeah, see, it's dangerous because like it doesn't taste like drinking. Then by, like, the eighth bottle, you're like...
Yeah, I have a friend who basically said that is it the Long Island iced tea?
Yeah.
It was like, I found my drink, but they got drunk after two of them. Yeah.
Cocktails are dangerous. It's just,
yeah. Yeah, there's a brilliant Kids in the Hall sketch called Girl Drink Drunk, in which this guy who's never found his drink is convinced to have a cocktail, and from then on out he has to hide tins of pineapple in his office and little fake umbrellas and things like that in order to be able to do it. Yeah. No, I don't currently miss alcohol at all.
So what's it like when you're out with other people and they drink around you when you're sober?
I have no problem with it at all. No. I find that when I drank, like 14 years ago was the last time I kind of had any alcohol of any kind. Like, I've tasted wine.
Yeah.
Every time I taste wine, tastes winey. but that's about as much as I do. The last time I drank, I went to visit my brother. He was living in Canada at the time. And my brother will drink for Ireland quite happily. Like, it could be an Olympic sport. Yeah. None of his Canadian friends believed that I was his brother because I wasn't able to drink. So over the course of 8 minutes, they bought me 4 shots of tequila and I drank them all in 8 minutes. I got drunk after 25 minutes. I started to get maudlin and sad about my girlfriend who I missed at home 5 minutes after that. I didn't actually cry, but I was not happy over the course of the time. I got emotional.
Yeah.
Within an hour, I was basically, the hangover was kicking in and I was brought home to have some pizza. So it was like, I'm really efficient drunk.
Yeah.
Not a good one, efficient, but a really efficient one. I was talking to a friend about it the other day. I don't think I've had a really positive experience on alcohol. I've never really enjoyed it. And so
that'd be a big factor to play, though, because most people drink for like a good time. I don't know, when I drink, like, most nights they're like great and I have a good time and like it's fine. But like, if you don't have a good experience, then it just ruins your night, and then you're like, oh, I'm never drinking again, you know, that way. So that's understandable.
I do think that people say that mothers would never have a child a second time because of the pain of childbirth.
Yeah.
There's something about that with alcoholism. Is like, you wake up the following morning and say, I'm never drinking again. But within like 2 or 3 days, people are like, pints? And you're like, yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
So there is some kind of alcoholic forgetfulness that goes on there. But I don't mind being around people that drink all the time. Yeah. Like, I've been a DJ for the last 26 years. So I'm always sober when I DJ. I even was when I was like someone who drank.
Yeah.
I stayed sober when I was DJing. And so I'm used to being around people who are messy drunk.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's my favorite thing to do. I'm very happy being around my friends when they're drunk, but I'd rather not be around people who I don't know when they're drunk. But I have to do it. It's kind of like part of the job.
Do
I don't mind.
I feel like you're like babysitting sometimes. Like, you're at like a family event and there's like, say you have nieces my age or whatever.
I always have to look after the drunk. I'm not that old. Thankfully, I'm the oldest in my family. So in relation to nieces and stuff like that, they're all still 3 or 4. So if I'm looking after those like 3 and 4 year olds, like while drunk, that's a really bad family party.
Yeah,
the 3 and 4 year olds, they're heavy drinkers. in terms of parties and being out, no, I tend, maybe it's my age. Like, I'm 42 now. I think that
my age is only a number. Don't bring that into.
You're totally right. As I said, I'm 2 21 year olds. In terms of how, in fact, that's really weird. I gave up drinking when I was 21, so I've not drunk for half my life now at this point in time.
Yeah.
Well, and more, because obviously I didn't start drinking when I was 4, as is the family tradition. I don't know. I most of the people I know don't drink to excess anyway.
Yeah.
You know, my brother would be the person who drinks the most, I would have said.
Yeah.
But he's a good drunk.
He's not like a messy.
He doesn't get messy. Angry, yeah. He's fun. He's the exact opposite of me. I'm sad. He's happy. He's fun to be around. He likes to dance and stuff like that. Yeah, that's how it is.
So you said you taste wine sometimes. So do you ever think you'd like ever go full on drink again? Like,
no, I mean, I can see it's way easier to drink than not drink in Ireland. Yeah. Like, people, our entire social setup is to go out drinking. We're used to going. People very rarely ask you, do you want to go for a coffee? They might do, but most are like, we go for a drink. Like, I do sort of corporate gigs and I do gigs for people where I have to meet them, and they're like, which pub are we meeting in? It's never a question of anything other than which pub are we meeting in. And it's great. Ireland has a really good pub culture. There's loads of pubs. I have no problem with being in pubs, but I just don't see the attraction. I've gone, I drank, what, from the first time I drank was when I was around 15. 16, I suppose, and very like a tiny, like three cans of Budweiser, yeah. The disgusting usual start, which is a very bad start. If only I'd started early on Blue Wicked, then I would have been much better at drinking than
that's
I
how
am
you do,
now.
That's how you do.
Yeah, but I think that because I started, I just never really got into it.
I think that's the Irish culture that you start before, like, before 18. Like,
Yeah, I think that's very common. Like, yeah. I know that the majority of my friends, like, all started early.
Yeah.
Early enough.
I know I started, like, after my friends. My friends started when they were, like, 14, 15. Yeah. And I started late when I was nearly 17.
Hmm.
Which was late to start drinking in Irish culture. Like, I got stick for, like, not drinking. And it was, like, kind of like peer pressure, but it wasn't, like, I was forced to drink anything. It was just, like,
That's
the Irish culture. Like, in work, everyone's, like, Brazilian or whatever. And because we work in a bar. And they were like, they thought it was crazy the way it was like, oh no, it was normal for us to start drinking when we were 14. Like, that's the normal thing. Like, it's like understandable if you're drunk when you're 14. And they thought that was crazy.
Kalash Sidulik Radio Week, here on Near FM.
Another man we got the opportunity to sit down with was John Gibbons. He first charted back in 2008 with his track Beautiful Filth. It blew him up. And his single PYT in 2017 gained him his first ever golden record. And his record Would I Lie to You achieved silver status in the UK.
And not only were both songs like ranked at like number 2 and 16 like of the most streamed songs of the year, but like John Gibbons himself was among the top 10 most streamed Irish artists on Spotify.
And after this interview, it really showed us that he doesn't plan on stopping. And he has many projects coming out this year alone. So here we have an exclusive interview with John Gibbons.
Hey guys, how's it going? Are you well?
Yeah, we're good. How are you?
Really good, thanks. Looking forward to this.
So, what got you into DJing and producing?
Well, what got me into DJing and producing originally was school disco back in fourth year in school. I was on a school representative council, and our job was to organise discos, table quizzes, fundraisers, all that kind of thing. And I was always huge into music, all kinds of music, from pop to dance, everything. But our DJ let us down on the day. And because I happened to be the one with the biggest music collection, I said, right, sure, I'll step in and see what it's all about. And quite literally, I remember standing on that stage and there were like 400 or 500 people there. The school hall was packed. It was all my friends and I knew everybody. And just the response and the buzz I got from that crowd, just that was it for me. Straight away, I decided I wanted to DJ. Not as a career at the time, just for fun and just for enjoyment. Yeah. And it became like I was in a band at the time and I used to sing a lot and do a lot of acting and that kind of thing. And all of that ended. It was all about DJing for me, and later then production. Production was kind of a means to an end. I could see a pattern emerging about 10 years ago whereby it wasn't enough just to be a DJ or a good DJ. You have to be a producer as well if you were to try and advance your career and have any kind of longevity. So that's when I started to produce, and I decided when I started producing I was going to produce the music that I wanted to play. So that was kind of the big rule for me. So that's a very, very positive version of how I got into DJing and then production.
Who would be your biggest inspiration at the time or even now?
It kind of changes a lot. I suppose musical inspirations. Growing up, Freddie Mercury was always a huge one for me, quite simply. Queen are my favourite band. And there was something about Freddie and his showmanship. And it's kind of apt now with the movie out and everything. He's back. Everyone's talking about him. But there was something about his onstage persona and his presence that I just thought, wow, look at that guy. It's so, no matter how outrageous it is on stage, it's so natural or appears to be so natural that the crowd can't but respond. And at the time, I didn't realise it, but I now know that was kind of the X factor that people talk about, you know, that just that something extra that he had on stage that just captivated an audience, even aside from his singing. And he was always a huge inspiration, and it was something that someone I always looked up to in terms of live performance. Then in terms of dance music, another one who really, really got to me was Keith Flint of The Prodigy, who, again, kind of apt that we're talking about him considering he passed away only last week. Both him and Maxim Reality and The Prodigy, their onstage presence was another thing that just totally captivated me, and how they could apply what they did to dance music. And then there were lots and lots of DJs along the way. Tony DeVitt was a huge inspiration for me. Another one who has since passed on. Sasha, John Digweed. And more laterally, I suppose, Carl Cox has been the one who's always been there. Like, from the very first, he was one of the first DJs I ever heard of, one of the first DJs I started listening to, and somebody that I still listen to and still look up to, because he's just always had what it takes to rock a crowd, which is the most important thing. So there's loads along the way, but they're ones that spring to mind.
When you started producing, did you think your track would make it as like as popular as it was?
It would be very easy for me to say, yeah, of course, I always believed. But no, I had loads of doubts. Like, what I try and do is work on music that I would play myself or that I actually liked myself. I mean, that's the big one for me. I would never work on something that I have in the past worked on things that I didn't really believe in and didn't want to do, and they never turn out well. They're never what you want them to be in the end. So, I mean, any of the tracks that have been released that you would have heard to date, at some point there was just that spark for me where I thought, yeah, this is really good and I love it. And then it follows on that I think if I love it, well, I would like to think, based on the fact that I've done so much DJing over the years, that I have a fairly good idea of what other people want as well. So yeah, I mean, I would have been very hopeful that tracks such as Would I Lie to You or PYT or Sweat would have done as well as they did. But when you actually see it happen, it's a totally different thing. Like, if I look at the success of PYT and what it did around the world, when you see it happening in front of you, you think, well, yeah, I always thought it could, but I wasn't prepared for this at the same time. So, you know, everybody has doubts and I'm no different. So it's very gratifying when it does happen, but I'd be lying if I said I was 100% sure it was going to.
What is a track that never gets old for you, no matter how many times you play it?
The big one for me is Grease 2000 by 3Drives. It's my favourite dance tune of all time. And it's just one of those tracks that makes me... It physically makes me smile when I hear it. There's something about the riff, the way that track is put together, that makes me happy. And I think music is all about eliciting some kind of emotion in somebody. It doesn't always have to be happiness. It can be sadness. It can be anything at all. It can be anger sometimes. But that's the one that has the biggest impact on me every single time. I've listened to it thousands of times. I've played it hundreds of times. And it still never grows old. And even outside of dance music, it's a tough one, but my favourite song probably of all time is The Sultans of Swing by Dire Straits.
I love them. Mark Knopfler on the guitar. Oh my God.
He's such a hero and such a legend. And it was on a vinyl that my parents had.
I had the exact same vinyl at home.
It's mad. It's just one of those tracks that, again, makes me feel really, really happy. And I can't put my finger on it. There's just that je ne sais quoi in there that brings me back to it time and time and time again. Most of the back catalogue of the Prodigy, most of Oasis's back catalogue as well, because I'd be a big Oasis fan too. But if you were to ask me to pick one track, it would be Sultans of Swing, and then within dance music, it would be Grease 2000.
Have you ever had one particular gig or concert or festival that has been the most memorable for you?
That's a difficult question. There are ones that stand out. I would say the most memorable one in Ireland was last year's Olympia Theatre, which was my first Olympia headline show, and it was a sellout. And that just felt really, really special, because if somebody had told me even a year prior to that I'd be selling out the Olympia, which isn't traditionally kind of a dance venue, you know, it's more of a live style venue. I straight up would have laughed at them. I just couldn't have seen it happen. And it just felt, I don't know, it meant so much to me that so many people were able to come out and willing to come out. Because over the years, I would have done so many support slots to bigger DJs and played a lot of big gigs. But it's different when you're the headliner. And the fact that it was in Dublin and in Ireland, and, you know, it was a home crowd, because I genuinely feel that Irish crowds are the best crowds in the world. I mean, all bias aside, certainly the most vibrant, the most exuberant, and the most responsive crowds are in Ireland, closely followed by Scotland. So that gig was really, really special. And I will never forget the moment when I walked on stage, and it wasn't even about the sound of the crowd. There was a physical feeling. It was like this energetic wave that just hit me when I walked on, and I thought, wow, this is, for me, what it's all about. So that was absolutely amazing. There are other standout ones internationally. There was one called Technogeist in Mexico, which I played a good few years back, about 10 years ago. And they haven't had the festival since, but they're about to do it again in 2019. So I'm looking forward to hopefully going back there. That's the biggest physical gig I've ever done in terms of the number of people in front of my stage, which was over 50,000. And that was also one of my first ever international gigs. So it completely blew my mind. so far away on the other side of the world. And again, it just opened my eyes to what was out there, you know. So it gave me such inspiration to try and move forward and try and do more. And at the time, I just started producing, and I was crap at it straight out. I was crap. And it just made me think, no, I have to keep doing this. I have to keep improving, because this is what's at the other end, you know. So they're the two standout ones, but the Olympia one is probably the most special.
Kalash Sidulik Radio Week, here on Near FM.
And welcome to our first show of A Touch of Health. So basically, our aim for this show is just to spread awareness about all things health.
Yeah, so we'll be talking about a wide variety of topics today, from STIs to the effects that drugs and alcohol have on your mental health. And then later on in the show, we'll also be talking about dementia, and we'll be playing a short documentary that we made about it.
So the following documentary is a documentary that me, Grace, and Ellen Fisher, shout out, made, giving an insight to a life that has been affected by dementia. Hope enjoy. You guys enjoy.
Yeah. Hello, darling.
Hi, my love.
How are you?
We had a tea night down there.
A tea night?
A tea night, yeah, and I have a tea. I kept away from the meatballs.
I'm Anne Chapman. I live in Dorky, and I'm married to Jeremy. And Jeremy lives with dementia. You will notice I'm not saying he suffers from it. We live with dementia, both of us.
And do you know much about Alzheimer's or dementia before it affected you personally?
Not very much. I just, in a general sort of way, the way most people do, I thought it was a dreadful thing to happen to anybody, and I certainly never thought it would happen to us.
And when did you begin to notice a change in Grandpa?
It was very gradual, because we eventually, as a family, we eventually came to the conclusion that he was just a very pleasant, eccentric old man, and that he sort of would forget things and that he'd repeat things, but that was what went with the package when you get old. But then it got a little bit more serious. Came to a head when we brought him to Blackrock Clinic to have some tests done. And when he had these tests done, they were very badly done, and he became very, very distressed. And the distress was such that it wasn't normal. So we then made an appointment with the memory clinic in Merrion Road, which is effectively Ireland's centre for dementia. Mm. We went in and they gave several tests to us. They give psychological tests, physical tests, mental tests, cognition tests, that sort of thing. My daughter was there, well, Ruth was there too, and she said, well, what is the prognosis? And he just said, dementia. And you could have let a pin drop.
I'm Jennifer Carmody. I'm the home care coordinator with the Alzheimer's Society of Ireland.
What does the Alzheimer's Society do?
The Alzheimer's Society of Ireland was founded in 1982 by a small group of people who were caring for somebody with dementia. We offer a wide range of services for people with dementia, their families and carers. All our services operate using the philosophy of a person-centred care.
Are they funded by government, or how do you...
So we're partially funded by the government, but fundraising is an extremely important source of our revenue for our services. And this takes place locally across Ireland as well as nationally. We aim to raise about 5 million a year to support our services.
So what is dementia? Like,
dementia is the term which describes a range of conditions which cause damage to the brain. The damage affects memory, thinking, language and our ability to perform everyday tasks.
And what services are available for these people with dementia? Like, where would they go, I suppose, when you initially find out?
Well, initial diagnosis normally comes through a GP or a consultant. When people find out now they have dementia, we have dementia advisor service. So they're normally put in contact with one of our dementia advisors. The dementia advisor will go through a number of things with them. It will give them a rundown on services which are available locally. That could be anything from support groups, social clubs, day centres, Saturday clubs, to very ad hoc things like the Forget-Me-Not Choir, which happens down locally on Baldoyle on a Friday, which is a really good service for people with dementia. What people often don't realise is that many people could continue to live really well with dementia. People are getting diagnoses earlier and earlier and younger and younger. singing has one of the things that although people lose their memory, they don't lose the words of songs and things like that from the past. And it continues to be a really good therapy for people with dementia and their carers. And it's also a great way of those people meeting other people in a similar situation. But again, the main thing is stimulation to keep the brain active. And again, the support groups, we find that people with dementia and their carers can become very isolated quite quickly. The carer may not be able to leave the house for very long periods of time anymore. They're not doing the same activities that they normally do. So very quickly they become isolated, and also they have to deal with the changing face of their loved one. So the support groups provide a vital outlet for them to come and talk in a safe place about the changes that are happening. We have a helpline also if anyone is worried about their own memory or has a family member or someone close to them with dementia. They can phone our helpline. It's 1800 341 341. Again, they can find out a range of services there. Obviously, the service I operate is home care, and that's done through home care packages in North Dublin. So they would have to contact their public health nurse for that. And if deemed appropriate, then they would be assigned to the Alzheimer's Society.
So do you find that Grandpa's personality has changed much over the past 2 years?
In one way, he hasn't changed. He has changed, but only in a way that illness changes you. He's fundamentally a really lovely person. I'm not saying that because he's my husband, but people love him wherever he goes. People just love the man. But what he has lost is his filter. Yeah. He doesn't say the right thing at the right time.
Do you think he's aware that he has dementia?
I've often wondered, does he know? Today now he was very distressed. He was very happy when I'm there.
Yeah.
And then he said to me, "It's great for you, you have freedom," he said. "I'm in prison here." I can't explain the misery that I felt when he said that. And one time he did say to me, "Why am I here?" I didn't answer that. And I said, "But we're always together. I'm up every day." He said, "No, it's not the same." That's one of the feelings that you get. You're hollowed out. You sometimes can't cry. Sometimes the crying is very good for you. But I find now that if the sorrow is deep enough, sometimes it's beyond crying. If he had to be somewhere, I think where he is good.
Bye bye.
Bye bye, darling. I love you. Bye bye, pet.
Bye, my pet.
Bye bye. Bye bye.
Bye, pet.
Bye bye.
Kalash Sidulik Radio Week, here on Near FM.
Welcome to Goop. I am your host, Becky, and I'm joined by my co-host, Gabby.
Hello.
So today we're going to be discussing a few things that have been in the media recently, like the Michael Jackson documentary, Leaving Neverland, which has been quite controversial, which I'll get into later. But first we're going to talk about the Kardashian drama, being that Jordan Woods had a little kiss with Khloe Kardashian's baby daddy. But it's a good topic to discuss because it's really about cheating in relationships and friendships.
Absolutely. So, was Jordan in the wrong? Do you think that Jordan was in the wrong?
Well, let's get into what actually happened first. So, Jordan Woods' lifelong friend of the Kardashian clan, being Kylie Jenner's best friend, had a kiss with Khloe Kardashian's baby daddy, Tristan Thompson. Now, Jordan went on to Jada Pinkett Smith's Red Table Talk to share her side of the story, being that, yes, she did have a kiss with him, but it was more so on his side.
Yeah.
So he kissed her on her way out the door.
Right.
How does that happen?
I mean, she said that she had a couple of drinks in and she was walking out at 7 o'clock in the morning and
he walked up to her
and he was just like, bye.
Who really does that, you know?
Especially when that's your best mates.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
was she in the wrong for being in his house in the first place?
I mean, she did know him, so it would be more likely for her to be in someone she knows rather than going to someone she doesn't. Yeah. As she said that she was like, oh, I knew him, so that was a great party. Ooh. But would you actually go?
Yeah, like she did say she'd rather go back to his house rather than a stranger's, you know. Which you can see where she's coming from, because if you were to go, if you're at like a club and then you go to an after party, would you rather go back to someone's house that you know or a stranger? You'd probably rather someone you know. And she didn't see the wrong in it because, yeah, he was with Chloe, but like she knew him. And
yeah, but from Chloe's side, she was probably like, why is she going to his house for an after session? Like, why is he even having an after session? I'm here with a baby.
What, like. Yeah, she's like, why am I invited? Yeah, yeah. Like, what? I don't know. Like, I suppose it's kind of like, do it.
Like from her story, I'm like, oh, like, I feel so bad because the people online were literally like, you're like this and that and this. But like, she just, like,
she just went back to a party. Yeah. Like, okay, like,
she did kiss him, yeah, but does she deserve the hate?
But she was saying that, like, people, you know, so much paparazzi outside the house that she couldn't, like, her mom couldn't go to the shop to get food, her sister couldn't go to school, and, like, things, her brother couldn't go to work and all this
but
stuff.
But that's because of Chloe's reaction, the way she reacted online. She was saying that, basically, Jordan ruined her family, but her family was ruined way before Jordan, like, Tristan.
Yeah, it wasn't Jordan doing it. It was Tristan. Like, he was, like, Jordan's not the one in a relationship with Chloe. Like, Jordan's not Chloe's baby daddy. Like, she's you know, like, Tristan was the one who was in the wrong. He's the one, like, he kissed her.
And he'd done it so many times that, like, she just went back to him. And just because her best mate done it, she's like, oh, shit, like, am I, like,
oh.
Yeah, but she, like, publicly, she called her out rather than calling Tristan out. And she's like, oh, yeah, but I've been talking to him privately. But, have you?
Why would you talk? Like, she can talk to him privately but can't talk to someone who's basically, like, a sister to her.
Exactly.
Like, why did she have to be so, like, she publicly put it on Twitter and was like, oh, yeah, you, like, broke up my family and you couldn't even ring me. But Jordan had said in the interview that, oh, yeah, like, I've been ringing her and texting her and I've got no reply.
Exactly. And was it even worth it for being so public?
Like, like, why? Like, it's always so blown out of proportion because of how big they are.
Exactly. Like Kardashian, if you do Kardashians wrong, like, that's it. Your life's ruined.
Your,
like,
life is over.
Literally.
Like, look at what happened to Taylor Swift, you know?
Where is she?
I don't know.
Where is she?
She's in Kim Kardashian's trunk of her car. And that's Taylor Swift. Like, Jordan won't. Like, Jordan's only famous, really, because she's Kylie's friend.
Yeah, and, like, would you actually throw that all away? Like, Kylie is her best mate. She gave her a roof over her head. Like, would you actually throw that away for a kiss?
Yeah, like what happened? Like, Jordan lives with Kylie, so she was on the way home saying, yeah, I'm on my way back to your house. Like, I was in Tristan's. She was like, yeah, go. And then, like, when Kylie found out, did she, like, walk in and just be like, here,
get out. Like, she hasn't said anything about it, though. Like, Kylie's been, like, so quiet. But then, apparently, Travis cheated on her as well. So it's,
It's like, they're always in, like, that story's blown over by now. Like, like, how long ago? Like, a week ago or something. And there's so much more in the media now because of them, just because of how big they are.
Clarsidulic Radio Week, here on Near FM.
Hello and welcome to Spooky Boys. We are spooky and we are boys. Broadcasting live at the Hellfire Club in Montpellier, and it's proper, proper spooky up here.
Exactly. We're inside the cellar. It's stone wall, graffiti everywhere, and we have our desk and equipment here. It's pitch black darkness except for a few candles. It's mad cold as well, and I'll be honest, there's 100% a ghost here.
Yeah, I'm quite regretting... quite regretting coming up here, to be honest. We should have just stayed in the studio. I think I hear something scurrying behind me.
Don't worry, I don't think ghosts scurry.
They sort of more saunter and flow about.
Yeah, they're too chill. Ghosts are never in a rush, that's why.
Casper never woke up late for work. Must be a rat. If I'm not possessed by a ghost, I'll be bitten by rats in this place.
I have my trousers tucked into my socks, you know, just in case.
That's a good show, actually. Okay, so what's happening in today's show, Jordan?
Well, Dylan, in today's Spooktacular, we have some creepy short stories, beer music, and then we have an interview with a real witch who will be telling us about her witchy garden, how to find your magic symbol, and will also tell us about the magic spell we've all been casting for years. Afterwards, we have some first-hand ghost stories from the students of Kalosha Dulek, and then spookiest of all, we're going to summon a ghost live on air.
We are summoning a ghost live! in the hellfire. I'd better hold on tight to me spooky socks before they're blown off in terror. Hope you're armed with your crucifix, Jordan.
And me Bible. Listeners, beware. You're in for a scare because it's time for...
That's my scary, that is, isn't it?
So, what's our first story, Dylan?
Well, so we're going to have 5-second spooky stories. And if you've never heard of 5-second stories, it's a whole story told in 5 seconds. So our first one is going to be, I begin tucking him into bed and he tells me, Daddy, check for monsters under my bed. I look underneath for his amusement and see him, another him, under the bed, staring back at me, quivering and whispering, Daddy, there's somebody on my bed.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh. Do you think that's a child in the bed, or is it like someone's wife being tucked in there?
I'd assume it was written by the point. With the point of it being a child, but you can interpret it whatever way you want. Yeah.
But you'd probably rather it be a child because they're easier to like fight off kids.
Mm, exactly.
As opposed to fully grown.
Well, a ghost child, you can't measure the strength of them.
Yeah, you have. It's like a mental fight.
Also, how do you decide which is the real one?
Yeah, exactly. So you've got one. You've got a gun and one bullet. Which one do you shoot?
Myself.
You shoot. Same here.
Can't deal with that.
All right. What's our second spooky story?
Right. So I've got number two here. I can't move, breathe, speak, or hear, and it's so dark all the time. If I knew it would be this lonely, I would have been cremated instead.
Oh, being buried alive. That is proper knacker. That's probably the worst. I'd hate that. You wouldn't even know if you were buried upside down.
I don't even think you'd know if you're buried alive at first. You'd have no clue what's going on.
Yeah.
There's no way your mind would be able to go into a rational state that you'd know, like, right, what's after happening.
And imagine being buried in wet socks as well.
Wet socks.
Wet socks. Jesus. There's no worse feeling. Buried alive and having wet socks.
Oh. So, luckily, they do autopsies nowadays, so, like... doesn't happen.
There's no chance of that happening. Yeah, they used to have that little bell, didn't they?
Little bell, yeah.
Around, yeah. Oh, I'm buried
like
alive.
Dork used to fall on that and ring the bell all the time. Yeah. So.
Okay, number three. Don't be scared of monsters. Just look at them. Look to your left. Look to your right. Under your bed. Behind your dresser. In your closet. But never look up. She hates being seen.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of people walk into rooms, you never see anyone look straight up.
Yeah, that's where you have to hide. Just like defy gravity. Or get like a little pulley system in.
Just super glue.
Super glue yourself. And then, oh, do you know what? Do you know when you were small, you had them, do you know your shoes? What were they called? Do you know the Velcro?
So you got
a Velcro suit and Velcro on your ceiling and just hop up and then just wait for them in and then...
That'd want to be some strong Velcro, and even then, how would you get down?
We've had enough of it.
How would you pull yourself off?
with a smile. what's the number four there?
Let me move on. I woke up to hear knocking on glass. At first I thought it was the window until I heard it come again from the mirror.
Yeah, well, mirrors are quite spooky actually.
Mirrors are great and like they really make a house look great during the day, but at night they're the worst thing to have in a bedroom.
Yeah, or if you forget it's there and it's dark and you walk by it and you're like, oh, who's that in my bedroom? And it's only me. So you're around there. Right, I'm going to skip ahead to me. This is my favourite one, okay?
Go ahead.
So, nurse's note. Born 7 pounds 10 ounces, 18 inches long, 32 fully formed teeth, silent, always smiling.
Ooh,
that's freaky.
That's...
Imagine that baby burst now, you're just, like just with a smile.
There's so many ways to interpret that, and it's all like, just all
yeah,
just
it's
bad.
It's all bad, yeah. Next one up there.
They celebrated the first successful cryogenic freezing. He had no way of letting them know he was still conscious.
So that'd be, would you say he'd still be cold?
I'm no doctor, but I think your nerves would also freeze there.
Yeah, so like maybe. Or could you blink? Could you move your eyelids? No, could you move your eyes?
I'd assume everything would be frozen.
Yeah, except your mind.
Hmm.
Mm. Frozen in terror.
Although your mind can be a great place.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll do one more quick one. There was a picture in my phone of me sleeping. I live alone. Do you know what that is?
That's a stalker right there.
That's when you have a dog that has tums instead of paws.
Like that works as well.
Yeah, a dog with like fully formed human hands.
Kalash Sidulik Radio Week, here on Near FM.
According to a recent study from the National Council for Special Education, one in every 65 students currently in school in Ireland is presenting with autism or have received a diagnosis of being on the spectrum. John is one such student currently studying media at Kalash Sidulik.
Oh, well, I'm 20 years old. I... I love to watch movies. I love to get inspiration from movies. I love to paint. I love to play games.
Autism is a name given to a series of disorders that affect a person's ability to function in certain areas. Autism doesn't just affect those diagnosed, but it also affects the families. Nolan is John's mum.
He was 3 years old in the year 2002. When he was two, he wasn't talking very much and wasn't doing what he should have been doing for his age. And there was a lot of repetitive behaviour. And he wasn't answering when he was called, when we called his name. So at first we thought it was his hearing, that he couldn't hear us properly. So we brought him to be assessed and have his ears checked. And then we were referred to a team in Temple Street. And he was later, a few months later, he was diagnosed with autism.
I think my mother told me when I was around still my early days of primary school. With autism, there's different kinds of people who have it. There are the mild level, such as myself. We can, like, do things that you do. We can, like, walk, we can talk, we can eat, we can do the stuff that you do. But for others, there are some who can't walk, who can't speak.
There's, you have severe autism, and it goes right up to highly functioning autism, which is called Asperger syndrome. I know they have problems with their social interaction. They want friends, but they find it difficult to make friends and conversation and communication with people. Sometimes they have problems with their five senses, especially sensory overload and sensitive hearing, where things would be louder than normal to a person with autism, and that can be very challenging for them. And there's a lot of repetitive things that they do all the time, and obsessions with certain things that they're only happy talking about and more comfortable talking about with things they're interested in, and find it difficult to move away from that topic. Sometimes as they grow into adults, some things can become a little bit easier for them.
But how difficult is it fitting in college?
It was a bit scary at first because it was a new environment that I wasn't familiar with. At first it was a bit difficult mixing in with the other students, but step by step, as time went on, I eventually got to find it easier. They, like, were aware I had autism and how I acted a bit different from the others, but they still treated me like a student. They didn't, like, say, like, they treated me like I was part of their school. It affects me in a positive way because I think with all the ideas that have been forming in my head over the years, it leads to great potential, and I see nothing wrong with that.
Autistic people, they want to be accepted by everybody and befriend people. And I don't think people should look at them as totally different to everybody. They have the same interests as other people. People shouldn't be afraid to ask somebody with autism about their difficulties and how they can help. You know, it would make it a lot easier for autistic people in the world today. It wouldn't define me as a person if I had autism. It would be just part of my makeup. Every child is different, but a child with autism is very unique in their own way. It's certainly not a disease. And when they have an interest in something, they excel at it, and they have wonderful minds. And to someone outside it might look like a challenge, but to someone with autism and the family, it's wonderful and very, very special.
They should always think about the positives of autism. They're different, and that's what makes them stand out.
Colour Cidulic Radio Week, here on Near FM. This radio work has all been completed by students attending Kalosha Dulig on our media and journalism courses. For more information, go to cdcfe.ie.